Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dignity Memorial. When your celebration of life is prepaid today, your family is protected tomorrow. Planning ahead is truly one of the best gifts you can give your family. For additional information, visit dignitymemorial.com.
Hey, I'm Holly from Massachusetts.
I'm James from Salt Lake City.
I'm Jason R. Wallace from America's Georgia in these United States.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is produced independently and supported by listeners like you and me.
You should support the show like I did.
Just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne. You probably won't get through this holiday season without hearing Ronnie Spector. I saw Mommy kissing Santa Claus? Come on. As a kid, Ronnie didn't spend her Christmases in the idyllic settings of Christmas songs like Sleigh Ride. Ronnie spent her Christmases in New York City.
I remember being in school, and in the books, they always had Santa with the black, you know, the black boots on coming down the chimney. So I asked my father, I said, we don't have a chimney. Where's Santa? How is he going to get here? I was so upset and frustrated. And he said, Ronnie, Santa is coming down the fire escape. I was so happy, Jesse. I ran to my room. I put the covers over my head, and I fell fast asleep. And that's the true story.
It's a Bullseye. Coming up, my interview with girl group superstar Ronnie Spector. As the lead singer of the Ronettes, she recorded some of the most iconic Christmas music ever made. We'll talk about her best holiday memories. We'll also talk about her career and about some of the gentlemen that she flirted with in her prime.
John Lennon was cockeye over me. He took me in his back room at Decca Records, and I almost had to use a whip to get that guy out of the room.
Then later, my interview with Fred Schneider. You know his voice, he sang for the B-52s, and he's a guy that definitely gets into the spirit of the season. Schneider recorded a Christmas album with his other band, the Superions. He'll deliver a very important holiday message.
Give me presents.
Hip-hop critic Andrew Nas will tell us about a couple of rap songs that you can play at your holiday party. The host of the advice podcast, My Brother, My Brother and Me, will guide you through some Christmas gift etiquette, and I'll tell you about a song that I put on pretty much every holiday season. That's all coming up on the Bullseye Holiday Special. Let's go.
Silent night, holy night, jingle bells, walking in a winter wonderland. How was that for a fabulous Christmas carol medley? It's me, Pee Wee Herman, in case you didn't figure it out. Duh! I'm here to just wish everybody the merriest, merriest, merriest of Christmases. Happy New Year and Happy Hanukkah to my Jewish friends. Ah!
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Ronnie Spector and her girl group, the Ronettes, were the centerpiece of the Phil Spector wall of sound in the 1960s. Their huge hit, Be My Baby, still gets tons of airplay on oldies stations. Ronnie was a teenager when she started recording, and the only thing bigger than her ambition was her hair. The Ronettes recorded some of the most iconic Christmas music ever made in 1963. It was for an album called A Christmas Gift to You from Phil Spector. It's been a few decades, but Ronnie's love for Christmas hasn't faded one bit. When I spoke to her in 2010, she just recorded a new album of Christmas songs. It's called Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Ever. Ronnie Spector, welcome to Bullseye.
Hi, Jesse. It's great being here. And I love Christmas.
What were the things that you did special at Christmas growing up in Manhattan?
Oh, gosh. First of all, I always went to Radio City to watch the ice skating rink. And my father would always take me and my sister to see them put up the tree when they lit it, you know, at Radio City.
Sure.
So we did so many things like that. And just getting Christmas ready at the house. I remember my father, because we lived in an apartment, and he used to take the tree and drag it down the hall. That's when I knew it was really Christmas.
Now, you had you just had one sister in the house who later joined you in the Ronettes. But
yes.
I know you had a very large extended family, like dozens of cousins.
Yeah. 23, like, first cousins. It was amazing. You know why, Jesse? My mom had 6 sisters and 7 brothers.
Wow.
So that's why I had so many first cousins and stuff. And they were my first audience. My 7 uncles and my 6 aunts. These were my audience, and they applauded me every Sunday at my grandmother's house. And that's when I said, I can do this, and I'm only, like, 7 years old.
Was singing part of your Christmases as a kid?
Of course. That was how it all started. I was like 6 years old, and I remember my mother taking – well, my mother was a waitress, you know, and she stood up on her feet all day, and I just had to go sit on Santa's lap. So my mother took me to Macy's, and I felt so bad as I grew older to remember, wow, my mother stood up on her feet all day as a waitress, and then she took me to see Santa Claus at Macy's. And we had to stand on line for like 2 hours, and I said, Mom, I can't go. And she would say, honey, I'm so tired. I said, but Mom, if I don't sit on Santa's lap, I'm going to be crazy this Christmas. She said, okay, Ronnie, okay. Or Veronica is what they called me back then. And I sat on Santa's lap, and that was when I fell in love with Christmas, with Santa, with Frosty, with the tree, everything. I mean, that's when it started, sitting on Santa's lap at Macy's.
Why don't we hear a little bit of your classic Christmas recording of Frosty the Snowman, Ronnie Spector and the Ronettes.
Yes.
Frosty the Snowman.
So how old were you when you first went up on stage at Amateur Night at the Apollo?
Oh, I was like 11, 12, something like way in that age.
Tell me about that first time that you performed at the Apollo. Do you remember it?
Oh, God, like it was yesterday. It was my first show ever, you know, professional show. And I remember it was Nedra, myself, Estelle, and another cousin, and my cousin Ira, which is a boy cousin, because back then they had Frankie Lyman, the students, Frankie Valli, you know, all these guy singers. So I said to my cousin Ira, I said, maybe you should sing lead. So we go out there to Amateur Night. I'll never, ever forget. My cousin Ira has a microphone in his hand, and nothing comes out. I was petrified. So I grabbed the mic from him and I started singing, "Why Do Birds Sing?" You know, the Frankie Lyman song. So I started, and the audience went nuts for me. So for me, you know, it was like I was passing because they didn't know what we were, but they loved me. And I said, oh my God, if I can pass at the Apollo, they'll love me all over the world. And I was very young, you know, to have all these kind of feelings about touring all over the world. And my mother would always say, don't get too excited. This is show business we're talking about. You don't know if you're going to make a hit record. You don't know anything. But I did know I loved the stage, and I got it from a very early age.
You and your sister and cousin had this outrageous look in that beginning of your career. I wonder how long it took for you to, and what you had to do to get your hair as high as it was when you were on stage. I was watching some film clips, and I was very impressed at the sheer height of what was on top of your head.
Well, I'll tell you what we had to do. First of all, you had to tease it a lot and use a lot of Aquanet hairspray. That's what we used in the 60s, Aquanet. Then you wind it around your hair. Then you twirl it again, and then you tease it again. We had a lot of hair. I guess it was for, you know, because of our background and stuff. That's what I said about me and Keith Richards. If we had married and had kids, we would have great, our kids would have great hair. I always say that to Keith.
I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is the Bullseye Holiday Special. I'm talking to a true fan of Christmas, Ronnie Spector. Every year, she celebrates the holidays with a big live extravaganza. It's called Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Party Ever. When we spoke in 2010, she had just released an album called Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Ever.
Merry, 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 merry Christmas time. I hope you've been thinking of me. I'm right where I want to be. What you say? Hey. Merry, 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 merry Christmas time. Throw another log on the fire. Take it high.
So the height of your career was this really transitional time in popular music. It was this time when doo-wop and that kind of thing was on the way out, and really harder rock and roll was on the way in, and you and your contemporaries were sort of bridging that gap between those two things.
Right.
And one of the ways that you bridged that gap was by having these, like, actual personal relationships with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Yes, we did.
Tell me about how you first met the Beatles.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Beatles hadn't come to America yet, so they weren't even known in America. And when we were over in England, we were, like, on front pages of every paper there. So the Beatles wanted to see Decca Records gave us a party, because that's what was our label over there. So Decca Records gave us a party, and guess who showed up? The Beatles. And John Lennon was cockeyed over me. And he took me in this back room at Decca Records. And I almost had to use a whip to get that guy out of the room. But, you know, I met all of them. I love them all. I love the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones were my opening act in England. So I knew them real good. We used to travel on the tour bus together. And Keith and I would go. And when it got too foggy and stuff in London, we would pull over. The bus would pull over. And Keith and I would get out and knock on doors. And they were so nice. They would open the door. And I would say, hi, I'm Ronnie of the Ronettes. And Keith would say, I'm Keith of the Rolling Stones. They let us in. They give us stones and tea and everything. And we take it out to the bus and give Mick some and the other guys, you know. Brian, I mean, everything. I knew those guys better than I knew the American groups.
Were your folks still on board for the whole rock and roll star thing when they saw that slit in the side of your skirt?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, my mother toured with us everywhere we went, even the Apollo Theater overseas in England. She was with us every step of the way. Because she told me once, she said, if you sit on a guy's lap and you feel something hard, get up and run. So I did. I was sitting on John Lennon's lap at the Plaza, and I felt something getting hard. And I got up and ran. And that's a true story. And he called me the next day. He was so embarrassed like by it. He said, we want to get out of here. We're like prisoners in this plaza. You got to get us out of here, Ronnie. I said, I can take you up to Harlem to get some ribs and chicken. They said, we'd love it. So I got him out of there, took him up to Harlem. We had a blast. Nobody recognized them. And it was great. They loved it because nobody recognized them.
When did you become aware of what a sort of holiday icon that that Phil Spector Christmas record made you and your contemporaries? When did you start to feel that these songs were going to be more than just what a Christmas record usually is, which is, you know, just a way to sell a couple hundred thousand records for a hit band. You know what I mean?
Well, I tell you one thing. Phil Spector was Jewish. He didn't know anything about Christmas. So he'd come to my house and ask me what. That's why I sang I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. He'd say, what did your mother and father do when you were a little girl? And so all my songs, and Frosty the Snowman and Sleigh Ride. I loved sleighing. So everything that's on that album of my stuff was actually done from my own words to Phil, and that's how he got he didn't even think about Christmas because, like I said, he was Jewish. So I got him really into Christmas. That's how he made that It's a Christmas Gift for You.
Let's hear Ronnie Spector and the Ronettes singing I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
Okay. Mwah. I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. She didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peek. She thought that I was tucked up in my bedroom fast asleep. Then I saw mommy tickle Santa Claus underneath the beard so snowy white. Oh, what a laugh it would have been if Daddy had known to show mommy kissing Santa Claus last night.
The Bullseye Holiday Special continues after a break. We'll hear more of my interview with girl group legend Ronnie Spector. Plus, Andrew Nas will share a couple of rap songs. It'll be perfect for your holiday party. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
I'm Cameron Esposito, the host of Wham Bam Pow. This is an action and sci-fi movie podcast on MaximumFun.org. We talk about punching. We talk about car chases. We talk about arms, muscles that are on arms. And every week I'm joined by panelists Rhea Butcher.
That's me.
And, of course, also Ricky Carmona.
Oh, I'm all up in it. That's what's up.
The Afro spokesman. We are going to give you all of the jokes and all of the happiness and all of the information that you need to watch action sci-fi films to the fullest. Mm. Find it at MaximumFun.org or you can subscribe on iTunes.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This is the Bullseye Holiday Special. My guest is Ronnie Spector. In the 60s, she recorded some of the most iconic Christmas tunes ever with producer Phil Spector. We spoke in 2010. It was right around the time she put out a new Christmas album. It's called Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Ever. So you've been doing these holiday shows for more than 20 years now, since the
yes.
since the end of the 80s.
Yep.
What do you have to do to gear yourself up for the Christmas season? How do you wind your, get yourself into that Christmas place?
Well, I've got two kids, two boys, and what I do is I put on A Christmas Gift for You, my old Christmas album, you know. And I put that on, and then we start, doing the Christmas tree and putting all the stuff on it, you know, the bulbs and the everything, the peppermint sticks, everything. And that's how I get into Christmas, of course.
I grew up in with a very small extended family, but my wife has, like you, dozens of cousins. And they have this Christmas Eve party every year at her grandparents' house.
Yes.
With literally like 40 direct relations all celebrating Christmas together. And I wonder if you had any Christmas traditions like that with your huge extended family.
Oh, of course. I mean, I remember my grandmother and all her kids, you know, which were my aunts and uncles, they lived on 140th Street in New York, and I lived 151st Street in New York. So every Christmas we used to go to my grandmother's house, and all my aunts, I remember one aunt loved cigarettes, so I'd buy her cigarettes. Of course, my mother would buy them. I was only like 7 or 8. My mother would buy the cigarettes and put them in a Christmas pack, you know, because they were square, so it was easy to wrap. And another aunt loved Sherman's Barbecue on 151st Street, so I did the same thing. They'd wrap it up in tinfoil, and then I'd put Christmas wrappings on it. I did things like that for all my aunts and uncles and cousins, and I was the star of the whole family.
I like the idea of the traditional Christmas gifts being a pack of cigarettes for
right.
one aunt and some
Sherman's
barbecue.
Isn't that something? But they wrapped it good and stuff, so it wasn't like when I say barbecue to other people, they say, "What? What kind of present is that?" I said, "Well, that's what they wanted." And we didn't grow up in a very rich family or even middle class. You know, we lived in Spanish Harlem, so all those things were very necessary, and my aunts and uncles loved everything I did.
I went really deep into your catalog when I was preparing for this interview.
Yes.
And I really loved listening to a couple of songs that you recorded in the 70s. One of them was this song called Try Some, Buy Some that
You recorded for Apple Records.
Yes, with George Harrison.
Tell me how you ended up not just being pals with the Beatles, but recording with them.
Well, it was very simple. They said, we want Ronnie Spector's voice on Apple Records. And my ex-husband took me over to England. We got over there, and I get into the studio. There's one person in there, and his hair was long, so I couldn't really see who it was. And I got up, and he was sitting at the piano, and he looked up, and it was George Harrison. And we hugged and kissed. Well, not that kind of kissing, but, you know, hugged and kissed and everything. And it was so great. And he wrote Try Some, Buy Some for me right there on the spot. And we did that song, and then I went back to California to be with my adopted children.
Let's hear Try Some, Buy Some from the early 1970s, a song
written
by George Harrison, performed by Ronnie Spector.
Way back in time, someone said try some. I tried some, now buy some. I bought some. Whoa, whoa, whoa. After a while, when I had tried them, denied them, I opened my eyes and I saw you. Not a thing that I have, not a thing that I have.
You also recorded in the 1990s with Joey Ramone of the Ramones.
Oh, yes. Love Joey.
How did you first meet him?
Well, I had met Joey like a few years before we recorded and stuff. We'd always meet at this place called the Continental down on 8th Street. And then we got to talking one night. So he said, Ronnie, I would love to record you. You're my favorite female singer. So he said, we got to make a record together. And at the time, I didn't know Joey was sick. You know, I didn't have any clue. And then we would go over to Daniel Ray's house, his best friend, which lived a block from him. And that's when he would bring his lunch. We did like four EP and everything. And I had no idea. We did this one song called Memory, you know, and it was like telling me he will only be a memory in the near future. And I had no idea that he was dying and stuff. And it devastated me when I couldn't go and see him in the hospital that very last time. He said, I don't want Ronnie to see me like this. So I didn't see him the very last time, and it broke my heart. He was the nicest guy, and he was so, genuine. You know, he loved rock and roll.
Woke up thinking about you today. Why does it have to be this way? We drove each other crazy. Bye-bye, baby. It's over and it's done. We had some good times, we had fun. We drove each other crazy. I'll always love you. Bye bye, baby.
Had you heard his records when you first met him?
Oh, yes. Of course.
What did you think of them? I mean, it's something that they're so deeply rooted in the music that you made, but they're also so completely different.
Well, that's what I liked about them. The fact that they were like me and they liked my music, but they were different from me. That's just like the Beatles and the Stones. We were all so different. It's a little Ronnie sitting in the middle of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And then I come to New York and I've got Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen, and Joey Ramone and the Ramones. So I've been surrounded by people that love my voice, thank God.
What do you enjoy most about being a music performer?
I love being in the recording studio because it brings me to the stage with new material. And, of course, I sing all my old songs, but it's nothing like doing something new and fresh and, you know, like the new CD. It has all my songs on the originals. And, you know, Sleigh Ride and Frosty, all those records were like Irving Berlin and stuff. But my stuff that I did now is like stuff that is original, and I love that.
Ronnie Spector, we spoke in 2010. shortly after the release of her album, Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Ever. She continues to celebrate the holidays every year by touring her show, Ronnie Spector's Best Christmas Party Ever.
The streets are ringing, oh, because it's Christmas once again. Lovers kiss in public shining. Mistletoe was hung there slyly. Oh, because it's Christmas once again.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. You know, I give my email address out at the end of the program. Every week, especially this time of year, I get the same email over and over and over. What rap music should I listen to at the holidays? Well, great news. Our resident rap critic Andrew Nas is here to talk about a couple of hip-hop tracks that are perfect for Yuletide cheer. Hey, Andrew, how's it going?
Hey, Jesse. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I'm excited about this Christmas rap segment. Let's talk about Outkast's legendary first record, Player's Ball. We might as well just take a listen to a little bit of it.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's beginning to look a lot like wood. Follow my every step. Take notes on how I crep. I'm about to go in depth. This is the way I greet my season. Here's my guess to rep. I kept, to say the least, no, no, it can't cease. So I begin to piece my two and two together. Got no snowy weather. Have to find something to do. Bet. I said some trap, so shut up that. Nonsense about some solid night. I got sick crock if it ain't real, ain't right. I'm like, no matter what the season, forever chill with Smith. I sip my fifth, I chill with Weston, got my reason. So tell me, what did you expect? You thought I'd break my neck to help y'all deck the halls? Oh no, I got other means of celebrating. I'm getting blizzard at Hojo, I got the hoochie waking. I made it through another year, can't ask for nothing much more. It's Outkast for the books, I thought you knew, so now you know. Let's go.
It's a really amazing record. I mean, these guys were, like, fresh out of high school. How old were they? 17, 18, something like that.
Yeah, late teens.
And they were Outkast right from the start.
Well, that's what's crazy about it is when you think about the fact that their aesthetic is rooted in, like, a Christmas carol. You know what I mean? Like, this was the foundational record for the group. This is really where they kind of found their sound. And it totally reframes everything when you realize that it was a Christmas song originally.
This ended up being a pretty significant hit for Outkast and really launched their careers.
Yeah, which is rare and weird. I don't think that's very common that a Christmas song can be slightly edited to seem not like a Christmas song, which is really all they did, I think. I think the only edit they made was they cut out Big Boy saying Deck the Halls. Everything else, the sleigh bells, the ho-ho-ho, everything else kind of stayed in. I mean, historically, I don't think people even realized that that's what it was. Just kind of crossed over as a regular rap song.
I think it'll sound nice between the Bing Crosby and the Nat King Cole. Speaking of surprise Christmas themes, let's take a listen to a little bit of a song called Weird by Gucci Mane.
Jingle bells, Bubba Kush bells, 675 were out. My trap do numbers, chickens all circles, but come back, dog, out.
My swag turned up, my swag got it now. Your drum seems to shout that our beast still got down. That chickens with the stout. I count so much money that my fingers got a crown. If you're not with that count, I suggest you better bounce. Now I'm rolling up the print. Gucci Mane's an alien and you're not even an ant. Never say can't ball, Kevin Durant. Kemp shine like lamps, guns, grass, gang, ground. Crack the egg, that's my charm, like an omelet on my arm. From a diamond for my son, yellow diamond for my mom. Then go to the pub, said you know what I was doing. Left machine and beam of Corvettes in my 10-year class reunion. Gucci. My flow so weird. Diamond same color as Santa Claus beard.
So there's some very charming lines in the song. Count so much money, my fingers get cramped. Gucci Mane's an alien, and you're not even at a reference to Outkast and their album ATLiens. But what part of it is Christmas themed?
Well, I mean, the chorus is just, he just kind of breaks out into jingle bells for no reason, talking about how his diamonds are the same color as Santa Claus's beard. At this point in Gucci Mane's career, I think it makes perfect sense for him to make a regular record of Christmas Carol for no reason whatsoever. It's almost like the inverse of the Outkast record, where it's like they had to change a Christmas Carol into a regular song, whereas Gucci, as he mentioned, he's kind of weird, so like it wasn't a big deal for him to just be in the studio. Like, he probably recorded this song in July or something and wasn't even thinking about Christmas. Which I believe is when this came out, like, that guy could rap. Like, he was in this kind of like E40 like zone where he was just very into words, and you can hear it here, you know, and just like probably Christmas popped in his head and that became the song. So it's tight.
A really remarkable dude and a really amazing record. Thanks for sharing it with us, Andrew.
Yeah, man. I hope Gucci Mane's having a good Christmas.
I hope he is, too. I wish nothing but the best for Gucci Mane. Andrew Nas, our resident hip-hop guru, you can find him on Pitchfork and The Wire, Spin, The Fader, other publications. He also blogs at Cocaine Blunts, and you can go there to find his big rundown of the year's best hip-hop, which is something that I look forward to personally. Every single year, I find myself spending hours watching YouTube videos and downloading records after he posts that. So please go do that. Thanks so much for joining us, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jesse.
Periodically, we like to check in with the brothers McElroy, the hosts of the podcast My Brother, My Brother and Me, to get some advice on our pop culture quandaries. After all, it is an advice podcast that they host. Travis, Griffin, Justin, welcome back to Bullseye.
You did those names. I don't want to nitpick like right from the get-go, but you did do those names out of chronological order, which is how we prefer it.
I'm going to be honest. You guys are lucky that I remembered all your names. I'll tell you guys, the weather outside is frightful because it's holiday time and we have some holiday related pop culture quandaries for you to solve. You ready to do this thing?
I don't have a choice.
Okay, here's something from Eric. He writes, I play Fagin at the Dickens Christmas Fair, but my wife thinks it's embarrassing and refuses to attend. How do I convince / bribe her to go?
Is this a fair in which people just dress up as, like, Dickensian characters and just, like, walk around in character?
It's like the Renaissance Fair, but for 19th century England.
How am I not there for that? I need to be there.
I hope that's not the case, because there's nothing more unsettling than a guy with a Cockney accent walking around asking if he can recruit your son.
He's got nimble fingers.
Look at his tiny, sweet hands.
Examine those digits.
You guys are way, way, way sub Dick Van Dyke. Can you please give this poor man some advice?
Oh, that's it. No, okay, that's what you do. You tell her, until you come to my show or fair or whatever it is, I still don't understand. I'm going to speak with this Cockney accent as punishment.
If she won't come to the Dickensian fair, you bring the Dickensian fair to her. There's no occasion. Family funerals, lovemaking, there's no occasion that does not call for your Fagin accent. And I would guess prosthetic nose.
Do you think that he could sweeten the pot by offering her a fine fat goose?
The one as big as me?
Maybe a pudding of some sort. People seem to have a lot of solid pudding back then. Maybe a solid pudding.
Here's a question from Gabe. He asks, is it an insult to the giver to spend money or gift cards that you received as a gift on bills?
I think it's an insult no matter what to tell the giver what you spent the money
on. Yeah,
like,
they don't want to know. They want the transaction to end there. I would like to know what bills you're paying with gift cards.
I'd like to pay you in this $10 gift card, please.
You know what? I think that anybody who gives you the most thoughtless present you can give anyone is not allowed to dictate the terms of how you spend that thoughtless, awful present.
I think by the definition of giving someone a thoughtless gift, you're sort of buying yourself the luxury of never having to think about it again. Like, I'm pretty sure they don't need an update. They forgot to get you anything.
Lindsay writes, when hosting a Christmas or holiday party, what's the obligation for music? Must the host play Christmas or holiday music?
The obligation is Harry Connick's Harry for the Holidays on repeat, full blast. Next question.
Travis isn't kidding. Happy holidays, everyone.
Except anyone in immediate proximity of Travis and his boombox.
I think the problem is you have to decide whether or not it's a Christmas or a holiday party. If it's a Christmas party, I think you can lean into the festive music. Otherwise, I mean, it seems a little Scroogey to avoid the very theme of the party that you're throwing. If you're throwing a holiday party, I don't really know what the protocol is there. Just cheerful music? Optimistic?
Well, there's also that like weird like plucky, you know, string music that's like completely unidentifiable as any known song. But you turn it down so it's just like on, you know, the first setting. And you walk into a room and it's like hidden behind, you know, the tree or something. Yes.
Like a CD of things that sort of sound like Greensleeves.
Sure. Yes.
I gotcha.
Well, Travis, Justin, Griffin, thank you so much for sharing your holiday sort of wisdom with us on Bullseye.
I'm glad I could help.
Merry Christmas.
The McElroy brothers are the hosts of My Brother, and Me. You can find the show free online in iTunes or at MaximumFun.org.
Presents and I'd be glad. But the last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside a department store. A gang of kids came over and mugged me and knocked my reindeer to the floor. He said, Father Christmas, give us some money. Don't mess around with those silly toys. We'll beat you up. Don't hand it over. We want your bread, so don't make us annoy. Give all the toys to the little rich boy.
After a break, hear my interview with the B-52's Fred Schneider. We talk about fruitcake and presents. It's pretty cool. It's the Bullseye Holiday Special for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
My name is Dave.
My name is Graham. And we're both the host of Stop Podcasting Yourself, which is a podcast from Canada. In fact, we've won the best podcast in Canada 2 years in a row at the Canadian Comedy Awards.
Sounds made up.
It does sound made up. Even as I was saying it, I'm like, did that really happen?
Here's the thing. Stop Podcasting Yourself is a very positive show about two people who hate absolutely everything.
But we love you and you listening through all this promo. Ah, the people have already fast-forwarded through this part of the promo.
Anyway, thanks.
We're Stop Podcasting Yourself, and you can find us at MaximumFun.org.
You have good cheer. I love you. Good dog. Got my baby.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. There are few bands that better define outrageousness than the B-52s, and there is no greater symbol of that group's outrageousness than Fred Schneider. His signature, I don't know what exactly to call it, talk-singing, bellowing, proclaiming, is one of the most identifiable vocal styles in all of rock music. It's a voice that begs to be impersonated. Maybe you've done it at karaoke yourself. It is literally taking all of the self-control I can muster not to do a bad Fred Schneider impression right now. I spoke with the actual Fred Schneider in 2010, just after he released a Christmas record with his group, the Superions. It's called Destination Christmas. Before we get to our conversation, let's hear a little bit of their song, Fruitcake.
What you making? Fruitcake. What you baking? Fruitcake. Candy cherries, red dye number two. Green cherries? Green ones too. It's fruitcake. It's fruitcake. Pecans or walnuts, citrus peel, lots of stuff, add what you feel, sticks of butter, cinnamon, mo molasses, lots of dark rum, artificial color, artificial flavor. If your family don't want it, give it to a neighbor. It's fruitcake. It's fruitcake. What you making? Fruitcake.
Fred Schneider, welcome to Bullseye.
Good to be here. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much. What time of year was it when you recorded this Superions album and you wrote all these Christmas records?
Well, I would go down to Orlando and work with the guys, and I had Christmas ideas, and the B-52s didn't want to do a Christmas record. So we were going to do a Christmas record, a Halloween record, and a regular record, but we just got caught up doing Halloween songs, and we wrote 9 songs in 11 days, one of which was a Halloween song.
To be fair.
Yeah, because we wanted to do a Halloween record, but that'll be next year.
Let's talk a little bit about your career with the B-52s. The group of you founded the band in 1977,
mm-hmm.
and your recording breakthrough with Cosmic Thing was in 1989. So you were certainly veterans by the time you became major stars.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about what kind of scene you were part of, to the extent that there was a scene in 1977 in Athens, Georgia.
It was basically, Athens was not the music mecca it is now. It was nothing like that. Like Michael Stipe said, you could like lay down in the middle of the main street and not get hit by a car on a Friday night. We were just a bunch of nuts hanging out, and we just got together one night and made a song, and from that point on, we created a band because we had nothing better to do.
Was there like even a place for you to play?
We played on a kitchen table. we played in the living room of my friend's house. That was our first gig. I told him we had a band, even though we were just rehearsed once, or you know, just got together and jammed. We had one song called, well, this dates, you could tell when we started, Killer Bees had arrived in Brazil, so we had a song called Killer Bees. That's just, you know, all the different disasters that you read about in like tabloids strung together into a song.
One of your first singles was also one of your most iconic. Let's hear a little bit of the B-52s and Rock Lobster.
I have to say, I didn't know that Rock Lobster had come had been written at the very beginning of your careers, and I was sort of surprised that your aesthetic was so fully formed right at the very birth of the band. What were the different members of the band sort of bringing to the table that made the kind of crazy pastiche that the B-52s were and are?
Well, Ricky learned how to play guitar watching educational TV. Keith was a drummer in different bands locally. Everyone's musical taste was very eclectic. We liked everything from Perez Prado to Ema Sumac to James Brown to punk music. We had a party. Anything went. It wasn't just one style of music. I've always been writing. I mean, the last thing before I dropped out of college, the last thing I did, I didn't want to do a final project, but then somebody says, I'm going to do a book of poetry. And I thought, I'm going to do a book of poetry too. So I just wrote crazy stuff. And the teacher said, you know, I don't understand this at all, but I know you're serious. And I got an A. And then actually some of the poems became, There's a Moon in the Sky. A couple of poems became the basis for songs.
What kinds of things were the poems about that your teacher was led to believe that they were quite serious?
Well, they were literate. I mean, I used a lot of similes in that. And,
look, there was synecdoche in the poems.
Yeah. Well, I had to read them in front of the class, and everyone just looked stone-faced except my friend who was just laughing the whole time. The first poem I wrote was, it's called Flamingo. It's something like, let's see, crimson and rose feathered stain, sight of recent assassination, motives foul and clandestine belie the murder of beloved flamingo by unassuming Rosette Spoonbill. That's the gist of my final project for creative writing.
Were you surprised when Cosmic Thing brought you from beloved cult act of 11 years to multi-platinum recording artist?
We were all going broke, so it was a welcome change. The record company was ignoring us. The record company didn't even get... I mean, I had to literally go with the A&R person while the band did sound checks and go to different radio stations to beg them to play Love Shack because everyone thought it was too weird.
Well, I mean, it was pretty weird.
It was weird for the time.
It remains pretty weird.
But I thought it was our most accessible thing, you know, on the album. And, you know, finally it just started going up the charts all around the country at different times. I mean, it was never like consistent, like Paula Abdul and Milli Vanilli were the two above us at the time.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. You're hearing my conversation with Fred Schneider. He sings in the B-52s and with a group called The Superions. We spoke in 2010, just after The Superions released a Christmas album. Let's hear a little bit of Crummy Christmas Tree by The Superions. My guest is the group's lead singer, Fred Schneider. Had you been, like, saving Christmas song ideas for years by the time you cut this record? Like, did you have a secret notebook in your...
Yes, but it's basically titles. Like I said, I'm going to write a song called Fruitcake. And I'm serious. I just have the word fruitcake. So I knew I was going to do a song called Fruitcake. And actually, Crummy Christmas Tree, I just came up with one Christmas at a party. And, you know, because they say, everyone has to sing a song. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to sing a Christmas song. And so I just made up Crummy Christmas Tree. And hopefully it's going to become a family and friendly favorite.
Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Christmas tree. Nobody wanted me. I had no branches, just a trunk. What a pitiful sight to see. Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Crummy, crummy Christmas tree. Crummy, crummy.
What were your fondest holiday memories? What did you draw upon when you were writing and recording this record?
We drew upon a lot of glasses of wine. And I don't know. I can write songs they just come to me. The song "Chillin' at Christmas," I said, you know, let's do some music in this genre, the sort of loungy, and actually it was sort of reminiscent of like a Grace Jones track, slightly, but you know the melodies were original and all that. And then I just came up with words. And Under the Tree. Under the Tree was the one sort of inspired by Grace Jones' track. And Chillin' was just, I don't know, I wanted a song about an avalanche.
And why wouldn't you?
Well, we have the Abominable Snowman, avalanches, sleigh bells, Christmas tree. I mean, it's a multifaceted holiday album.
Have you developed new Christmas ideas since you recorded this Christmas album? Have you started in on Superion's Christmas album too?
I do have. I have about four or five song ideas. Some are pretty much written.
What are the important topics that you haven't yet covered when it comes to Christmas?
Well, I have to mention Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and what is it? Solstice.
Sure.
What? Yeah.
My aunt in Oakland celebrates the winter solstice.
Oh, there you go. She's cool.
I think she thinks Christmas has something to do with the patriarchy or something. I don't remember.
Well, it's all based on paganism, so I just say go for the pagan part. That's more fun than, you know. Though I do thank a certain person for having their birthday on the 25th, so it made that record possible.
Hey, maybe before we go, we should have, you're probably the most legendary declaimer in the history of popular music. Is there some sort of holiday-themed declamation that you might make for all our listeners out there in what we'll call holiday land?
Give me presents.
Fred Schneider, one of the founding members of the B-52s and the kitsch-heavy side project, the Superions. We spoke in 2010.
Honey, I'm so glad we rented the chalet.
Oh, me too. What a view of the mountains.
It's Christmas Eve and I don't want to leave your side. I'm chillin' at Christmas with the missus. Chillin' at Christmas, Christmas kisses. I'm chillin' at Christmas with the missus.
Every week on the show, we close with a recommendation from yours truly. It's The Outshot. There are many, many terrible Christmas pop songs. Our greatest songwriters have written them. Our greatest pop stars have recorded them. In some cases, those two people are the same person, talking about Paul McCartney. Indeed, there have been relatively few pop Christmas carols that aren't terrible in the last 50 years or so. I was sitting here trying to think of some, and I came up with the Phil Spector Christmas record and almost nothing else. I mean, does anyone on earth actually like that Wham song? But there is one song, one beacon of hope, one light in the darkness. This Christmas by Donny Hathaway.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, the fireside is blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And this Christmas,
it's soulful, it's accessible to anyone. There's enough sleigh bells on it to remind you that it's a Christmas record, but then there's that beautiful little keyboard riff to balance out the kitsch. And most important of all, there's Donny Hathaway, one of the greatest pop singers of the 20th century. Is the kind of song that makes you want to forgive your parents and spend some time with your sister and even give your in-laws a big hug. That's what Christmas is all about, right? That's my outshot.
This Christmas, and as I look around, your eyes outshine the town they do. This Christmas, fireside's blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And this Christmas, we'll be
bigger hand now. Brother, Merry Christmas all over the land now. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Merry, Merry Christmas. Hey.
That's it for this week's Bullseye. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Julia Smith. Our senior producer is Nick White. Our intern is Brian Bolt. Thanks to Brian for production assistance on this week's episode. Interstitial music is provided by Dan Wally. Bullseye's theme music is provided by The Go Team. Thanks to them and their label, Memphis Industries. You can find this show and all of our shows for free at MaximumFun.org. You can also subscribe for free to our podcast in iTunes or wherever. If you have thoughts about the show, you can always email me, jesse@MaximumFun.org. And that's about it. Have a great holiday, everybody. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature song.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR. On this week's episode of Wildcard, actor Chris Pine tells us it's okay not to be perfect.
My film got absolutely decimated when it premiered, which brings up for me one of my primary triggers or whatever is like not being liked.
I'm Rachel Martin. Chris Pine on how to find joy in imperfection. That's on NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, the game where cards control the conversation.
The Embedded podcast brings you eye-opening reporting.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Immersive journalism.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Personal stories.
I was scared. Like, I can't protect you.
We are NPR's home for documentary storytelling. Find Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.